The CDC has guidelines on cleaning and disinfecting rooms or areas occupied by people with suspected or confirmed COVID-19. We're talking with a biohazard expert here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says it's unknown how long the air inside a room occupied by someone with confirmed COVID-19 remains potentially infectious. Facilities will need to consider factors like the size of the room and the ventilation system design, and then there are the surfaces. Do you work for a cleaning company? What is it like to deep clean and sanitize during the pandemic? Do you have enough PPE? We're at 800-642-1234. Carol Shabbat is a biohazard expert, owner of SteraClean, which operates out of the Maryland, Delaware area. Carol, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thank you for having me.
All right. So take us back pre-pandemic, before all of this took place. What was your company working on? What were the types of jobs?
Yeah, our portfolio and the jobs we worked were hoarding remediation, crime scene cleanup, decomposition site cleanup, disinfection and deodorizing against other viruses like C. diff and, rodent dropping cleanups, believe it or not. So that was primarily what we were focused on pre-pandemic.
Are you out there doing these cleanups for these customers?
We are, absolutely. I like to say it as simply as this. If no one else will clean it, we will. So we get into all types of different scenarios. If somebody is just reluctant to do it themselves and they just need help, luckily they find us, they call us, and we will be happy to help them out.
So when did the calls start coming in from customers looking for cleaning up from coronavirus?
Yeah, good question. I would say the first call I got was right at the beginning of March. And the first call I got was an embassy in Washington, D.C. And the gentleman was just, it was a facilities manager, and he was just really, really concerned. He made the right call because he had questions. He didn't know what he was facing. The building was about 750,000 square feet, so we had a lot of space to consider, and we just talked through it. And fortunately, we got, in the beginning of March, a lot of calls from people like that just preparing and trying to learn and educate themselves on what was to come and how to handle it. So the calls started right away.
And when you're talking through the situation with this prospective customer, what is that conversation like? What are you hitting on?
Yeah, it was actually a wonderful conversation because we were sort of both in the same boat of so many unknowns. So we just walked through it together. And I think in a lot of ways in life, common sense just has to prevail. So we walked through it. And I basically just mentioned, it's like, look, we can do this. We disinfect, we deodorize, we clean, we can handle this. But the first thing I would do if I were him was try to figure out how to not let it get into the building. So he and I talked. It's like, maybe you need to have secure doors for employees, section employees off in areas that they stay in and they don't wander anymore, or cleaning stations and things like that. And then just putting him at ease as far as, you know, he has 750,000 square feet, but that doesn't mean everything needs cleaned. In other words, atrium glass at the ceiling height, you don't need to clean that, but high touch point areas, entryways, sink faucets, toilet handles, things like that. That's what he needed to concentrate on. So it was a very fluid, very flexible conversation, and I think I gave him some peace of mind.
How would you compare crime scene cleanup to cleaning now, deep cleaning during the pandemic?
We approach it basically the same way. And we have to approach almost any job, whether it's crime scene, COVID, even a hoarding job. We have to approach it the same way, which is we don't know. We don't know what all is inside. We don't know what we're going to uncover. We don't know what the condition of the areas are, or the homes or the businesses, whatever we're walking into. So we really, it's not that much further out from what we are trained to do, what we have been doing, and how we handle things because of the unknowns. A lot of people say, well, you know, how do you know if you're doing a hoarding job, there's not COVID? That's a great question, because we don't, because some people don't even know they have COVID. So we just approach it with safety in mind first, precautions with the team, you know, protecting ourselves with PPE, masks, gloves, boot covers, goggles, whatever we need to protect ourselves with. And then we just approach it with, you know, we don't know, so we just have to be careful and pay due diligence to what we're doing.
How has your access been to the protective equipment, the PPE? Do you have what you need in order to do these jobs?
Yeah, that's a great question, too. I was fortunate in the beginning of all of this that I had a pretty good supply on hand. However, we did get a call for a major government organization in D.C. with almost 1 million square feet of cleaning space. So I did have to order more, and unfortunately, it was at the time where everything was sort of being gobbled up by everyone. So I had to go to Japan for respirator filters. I had a back order on supplies as far as the PPE suits, but I was able to get suits relatively quickly. And I would say the biggest thing was the equipment, especially the electrostatic sprayers. Again, fortunately, I had some, but I was looking to get more. And not only could I not get electrostatic sprayers, but if there were some available, the prices were so inflated. It was ridiculous.
So what are what are these electrostatic sprayers? What do they do?
Yeah, that seems to be the thing that everybody is gravitating to in order to clean and disinfect against COVID. And basically what it is, it's a spray mechanism, a gun, if you will, that electrifies the molecules of the chemical. So instead of the chemical just hitting a surface flat, the electrostatic element to the mechanism will it wraps around whatever it hits. So it's a 360 degree sort of capture instead of just a topical flat surface capture from the chemicals. So it's very effective, and it is a very good tool. But again, in order to get one now, I would be paying probably 4 times, 5 times, maybe 6 times what the normal price would be.
We're talking with Carol Shabbat, who is a biohazard expert, owns a cleaning business on the East Coast, and her company focuses on cleaning up hoarding environments, as she's described crime scenes, now disinfecting during the pandemic. You can join in with your questions about deep cleaning, 800-642-1234. We heard from Louise in Wauwatosa, called in this morning, and Louise says their carpeting is dirty from Wisconsin's winter, from dog accidents and all that stuff. Louise wants to know, is it safe to have the carpet professionally cleaned amid the coronavirus pandemic?
Absolutely. I would tell Louise, ask whoever she is engaging to clean her carpets, whether or not they are following the protocol of the government, the local government, state government, federal government, which is simply, you know, are their workers protecting themselves and her with masks and PPE? And if they're following those protocols, absolutely, it would be safe to allow someone in and clean those carpets.
In May, you and a pair of technicians worked on the home of a person who had passed away from the coronavirus. Can you walk us through the process of what you needed to do in order to disinfect that home?
Yeah, absolutely. The client who called was the daughter of the homeowner. And unfortunately, the homeowner passed away. And the daughter made the right call as far as not entering the home to secure, obviously, the things she needed to secure and then begin the process of settling the estate because she did pass from COVID. So she called us to disinfect the home so she could do, all the things she needed to do with her mom's passing. So the first thing we do is what I do is I just interview the client as far as habits and how her mom lived in her home and, you know, what she liked to do. In other words, this lady liked to knit. And I know that sounds sort of obscure, but it'll make sense as I go through here. But just an interview as far as the client, the homeowner, habits, things like that. And then once we got into the home, again, the vital points to address and focus on are high touch points. So, again, doorknobs, sink faucets, refrigerator handles. But, like I said, this lady liked to knit. So I needed to decide whether or not I could clean and disinfect and deodorize all her knitting material, her bag and her needles and all of that. And we made the decision then to also just discard the yarn because it's very hard to clean something like that. And since it was just yarn, we just decided to be overly safe and cautious. And we just discarded that. But what we do more importantly than probably anything is we really do try and put ourselves in that person's world. So we'll look and we'll see how this lady lived. So she sat in one chair and she had all her remotes at the side table and there was a lamp there. So if you're
walking
there,
in their footsteps, right? We have to pause there with Carol Chabot, a biohazard expert, learning about deep cleaning and sanitizing amid the pandemic. With your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The coronavirus can live on hard surfaces like plastic and stainless steel for up to 3 days. That's from Harvard Medical School. It can be contracted by touching an infected surface, then touching your mouth or nose, making cleaning of surfaces important. What are you doing to keep your living space clean? Has your cleaning routine changed? Do you trust disinfectant solutions? What about bleach? Join in 800-642-1234. Carol Chabot owns a company that cleans up hoarding situations, crime scenes, and now facilities needing disinfection due to the pandemic, and she stays with us. Carol, take us back into the home that you disinfected after the person had passed away and really understanding how you have to walk in their footsteps to understand what is the priority for cleaning and what can you let go of?
Right. And you put it better than I did. We do walk in their footsteps. What we try and do is just think beyond maybe the obvious. So in other words, in that situation, we emptied all the waste baskets because if you think about it, this lady was sick, so she was using tissues. Well, again, even though we have some guidelines and we have some statements from the scientists and everyone as far as how long this does live, we don't know for sure. So we emptied all her waste baskets just to make sure we're getting all of those things that we know that she used in order to, fight the illness that she was fighting. But really, we just do a triple check. We first clean, which is very important. We don't just spray a disinfectant. We do clean because there is this thing out there that is we call a biofilm. A biofilm is just basically film from grease or your oils in your skin that if you touch something, it transfers. And then that film attracts everything, dust, viruses, bacteria. So it's most important that you clean first. Clean the biofilm up that has everything attracted to it, and then you go back and you disinfect and sanitize the surfaces and the areas that we're working. So that's our protocol.
Well, untangle that cleaning and disinfecting, and when we should incorporate bleach and how we should use that. Help us understand these products.
Mm-hmm. The first thing I would tell people is if you're cleaning on your own, please read the directions of the product you're using and follow the manufacturer guidelines. I know before I started this business, I never read a bottle of cleaner. I never read it. I squirt it. I cleaned. That was it. But the key to this is each chemical or each cleaner that is on the market has different protocols as far as how to use it, and it's called a dwell time. And the dwell time basically just means the time you need that solution to be on a surface in order for it to be effective. So in other words, again, pre my SteriClean days, I needed to clean my counter. I took my spray, whatever it may have been, Lysol or Clorox or whatever, sprayed it, wiped it down. You read the directions, I probably should have left that sit for like 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever the manufacturer describes, in order for that to be effective. So that's the biggest thing people need to do. Read the bottle, follow the instructions. If you do that, you pretty much should be okay, because this is also a very weak virus, meaning the makeup of it is very weak, meaning you can kill it relatively quickly. So on the EPA website, if anyone goes there, they will see a list of products and plenty of over-the-counter products that you can buy at your grocery store or drugstore that the EPA is saying will kill this virus. But again, going back to what I first said, just read the bottle and follow the directions.
And letting that product sit and do its work, do its job, instead of just wiping it right away.
Correct. Absolutely. Because again, if you think, I like to help people understand how long something can stay on a surface. If you just, as long as you didn't just wash your hands, but if you take your finger and touch even your iPad or your iPhone screen or glass, you can see your fingerprint. If you take a tissue and sort of wipe that, you now have just smeared it. You haven't cleaned it. So it sticks and it stays around, and that's why it's important. Let that product, whatever you're using, sit there and work the way it's designed to work, and then you should be okay.
And how should we approach bleach?
I love bleach, and I am a I am a bleach person. However, bleach will obviously affect different materials and different surfaces. So I would say use it as long as you're not going to be bleaching out any kind of color or the surface would be damaged by it. I use bleach in my bathtub and my sinks and my tile floors. I use it as much as I can. However, you can't use it on fabric or it's going to turn white, of course. And there are certain materials, countertops, kitchen cabinets, things like that, that you shouldn't use bleach on. But I am a proponent. If you can use it, use it. Use it safely, though. Have gloves. Understand the fumes, so you should mask up and protect your respiratory system, because it will do damage if you're not using it properly and just inhaling those fumes. But if you can use it, I would use it.
We're talking,
or dilute it. You can dilute it.
Yeah, you can. And what are the, when you dilute it, what are those proportions?
Again, I would look at the manufacturer recommendation. It does depend on what you're cleaning.
Oh, okay.
So if it's a really tough stain, or, in our world, if we can use it on a crime scene cleanup and it's blood, we won't dilute it. But if it's something milder, it could probably be a 1 to 10 ratio.
We're talking with Carol Shabbat, owner of SteriClean, which operates out of the Maryland, Delaware area. She's a biohazard expert. We're learning about deep cleaning and sanitizing, especially in areas where there is suspected or confirmed cases of COVID-19. Still taking your questions, 800-642-1234. Carol, what is the most important equipment that you have that may be very low tech that we could perhaps incorporate into our cleaning bucket?
Just common sense. Common sense, and I'm not suggesting people shouldn't take this seriously. We should, and everyone should. But just think in terms of common sense. And again, if I get a call from someone who says, look, my grandfather just contracted or has been tested positive, but grandpa only like lived in one room of the house, we don't need to go to the second floor and deep clean the second floor if grandpa was never up there. So just common sense. And again, just think in terms of, okay, what could be potentially affected. People sometimes forget about the simple things like car keys and car door handles, a light, the switch on a lamp, a ceiling fan pull cord. Sometimes people forget those things. They are so concentrated on door handles and sink faucets and things like that. Credit cards, you know, just think in terms of going beyond the obvious and what you're really touching in a day. If you sit and think for just a few minutes, all the places you touch, you'd probably be amazed.
What about rags and sponges? How often should those be washed?
Yeah, that's a good question. We never use sponges. Sponges is just a revolving petri dish, as far as I'm concerned. However, we do use rags. We like microfiber rags or just a good towel kind of consistent cotton rag. The key to rags are get rid of them. Either throw them out or wash them in hot water. Bleach if you can bleach them, but get rid of them and don't overuse them. So in other words, when we clean, we're taking maybe a 1 foot square rag and we're making a quarter out of them. So we'll use on one side four different sections of the rag, and once we're done, then we throw them out.
Carol, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Carol Shabbat is a biohazard expert, owner of SteriClean, operating out of the Maryland, D.C. area. Her cleaning company works on jobs, including disinfecting facilities due to the pandemic. Just ahead, we look at how college campuses are addressing race. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.